welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at redrock_bball, facebook.com/redrockbasketball, and the email address is redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. Back again with another of the Season in Review podcasts. Today, we're going to be looking at the Denver Nuggets.
Bright lights of Denver are shining like diamonds, like 10,000 jewels in the sky.
And the Nuggets, if you listen to the podcast at all during the season, you know that that was a team that frustrated me to no end, mainly because of the way that Brian Shaw coached them. He did get fired halfway through the season, which is I never want to see someone lose their job, but he was blatantly incompetent, blatantly didn't know what he was doing, and was actually affecting this team's ability to play basketball, to win games, and the development of some of his players. What we saw when Melvin Hunt took over is a change. The team played better as a whole, but it affected a lot of guys in different ways. And we're going to talk about those players. And apparently, from what we're hearing, Melvin Hunt is in with a real chance of getting the job full-time next year, so we might see more of what we saw in that second half of the season. Next season and the year after, if Hunt remains in charge. We also had the news come out a couple of days ago about Ty Lawson and Kenneth Reed potentially wanting to explore trades if this team was going to blow it up and go into rebuilding mode. So that's something we have to consider as well, and I will get into that when we talk about the individual players. Let's start with the point guards, and we'll start with Ty Lawson, who was someone who in the offseason, he scared me quite a bit. There was issues with his ankle from the previous season. His durability did concern me. I had him lower than a lot of people, and at the start of the season, he was making me look stupid because he was putting up basically double-digit assists every game and was a real valuable and viable fantasy option. Didn't last the whole season. When Melvin Hunt came in, he was a player who really, really suffered. Look at his rankings. Head-to-head total ranking, 42nd. Roto, 48, which is probably a little bit lower than where he was drafted. Per game, 53, but when we look towards the end of the season, post-All-Star break, 92nd, last month of the season, 108th, we see Ty Lawson really, really dipping. Now, his overall season numbers, 15.2 points and 9.6 assists, they're great, but he's less than a 3 a game, 3 rebounds, 1.2 steals, and then poor percentages. A point guard who shoots only 73% from the line is not great, and 44% from the field, so it didn't help you in those areas. But we look what he did in that last month where he was almost just snuck inside the top 100. 11.9 points, half a three, 8.9 assists, less than a steal, 41 and 69%. We heard heaps of stories about the Nuggets checking out. We heard them doing that, you know, that huddle break with 6 weeks to go, 6 weeks or whatever it was they were doing. Their mind was clearly not on the ball. But Lawson was someone who regressed. The other guys, like Fareed and a few other players, improved with Melvin Hunt on board. So there was definitely he didn't play well. He didn't succeed in this new sort of offense. What does it mean for him next season? I don't think he's going to be necessarily a guy who is ranked 108th as he was over the last part of the season. But he's not someone that I'm going to be wanting to take in that top 50. Now, a lot changes if he does get a trade and this team does blow it up and he goes to another location, which apparently is appearing more and more likely by the day. That's something we obviously have to monitor. But at this stage, he's a points guy, he's an assist guy, and he's really, his steal numbers are pretty good. They're pretty good. Whoever won a game is good, but not much else. So he's not a multi-categorical guy. He's not in that second tier of point guards at all. And as I said, if it continues along this sort of track, he's not someone that we're going to want to rely upon in that top 50 or top 60 next season. Other point guards on this roster, Jameer Nelson came across after starting in Dallas, being in Boston, ending in Denver, and played too many minutes. I think that's not necessarily fair to say, but he played 22 minutes a game when I don't know why he was getting so many minutes in Denver. I don't know why he got so many minutes in Boston, but when he was getting the minutes, he provided a really useful fantasy guy to use. The last month of the season, he was the 102nd ranked player, which is higher than Ty Lawson. I think a lot of people would be surprised at that. When he got the minutes, he was able to put up numbers, and that's a lot of what fantasy basketball comes down to. Who is in the opportunity to get minutes? Now, I never should have thought that he should have been getting decent minutes. It was only 21 minutes a game, but he averaged 13.7 points in that last month, over two threes a game. Shot 50% from the field, which is a complete fluke because Jameer Nelson is not a 50% shooter. He shot 41% from the season, yet the last month he shot 50%. So a little bit of an anomaly there. It was a weird season from Jameer Nelson in total. Now, he has got a player option for next season of $2.8 million. No word whether he's going to be picking up that player option at this stage. But he looks like he'll likely remain as the primary backup in Denver and a guy who will share the court with Ty Lawson, which, again, I think is just a stupid move because both those guys are not great defenders. They're both pretty small. The fact that they play together is not a positive sign for this team moving forward. But, hey, it is what it is. One of the other point guards on this roster is Eric Green, who was selected in the second round of the 2013 draft. Didn't play in 2013, played in Europe. Came across in 2014, and looked decent. I think Eric Green is someone who does have some ability, does have some fantasy ability. He didn't really show us a huge amount. He only played 9.5 minutes a game, 3.5 points, 0.9 assists. Nothing really too exciting. The standard rookie poor shooting at 38% from the field. But I think if the Nuggets are looking to move into a rebuilding mode, and if say, Lawson's gone, Green will start to get minutes. He'll get 20 to 25 minutes a game and become someone that makes us get interested. In the last couple of weeks of the season, his per 36 numbers, 11 points, over a three rebounds, almost five assists, a steal. And that's usable for 14-team leagues, that sort of thing, 16-team leagues. And we'd expect those numbers to get better. So he's someone to watch for as they try and transition him into that primary backup and maybe even sort of sharing a starting role if Lawson isn't around. The other guy that they have who can play some point guard and also play some shooting guard is Randy Foy, who was great last season. He was great in 2013-14. Started off last season horrifically, and his total numbers just don't do what he did down the stretch justice. 198th per game, which is not great. The last month of the season, Randy Foy, the 54th ranked player. That's how good he was down the stretch. The numbers of 8.7 points, 1.9 threes, 2.4 assists on 37% shooting, which is what his numbers were for the season, aren't enticing at all. He played a lot of two guard, but down the stretch, that last month when he was getting big minutes, 31 a game, he was the starting two guard, 13.5 points, over three threes a game for the last month of the year, three rebounds, over three assists, over 1.3 steals, some really impressive numbers. And again, that's better than Jameer Nelson. That's better than Ty Lawson. That's fantastic numbers. And he's a guy that, depending on what they do in the draft with pick 7, and there's a big, not rumor, there's a lot of people thinking that Mario Hezonja is going to go to Denver, and he'd fit definitely a need on the wing, but Foy is going to be around. I don't think he can run the point full-time, but he can play off the ball with another point guard and play decent minutes. And when he gets minutes, which we saw Melvin Hunt like to do, he's someone who should be owned in all leagues. We have to wait how that pans out, obviously. But when we see how Denver's roster pans out, if he's in a position where he's going to be a starter and get 30 minutes, Randy Foy is going to put up fantasy value. He's going to hit threes. He's going to shoot the ball well for free throws. He'll get some steals. He'll score. And it gives you some decent-ish assists from the shooting guard spot. So don't sleep on Randy Foy. He was a guy who really picked it up in that second half of the season. Another guy who surprised me immensely, and that's the best way of putting it, Will Barton, who came over from the Portland Trailblazers in the trade that sent Aaron Aflalo to the Blazers. Barton came across and he outplayed Aflalo. Wasn't a good player in Portland at all, didn't get much of an opportunity, and his season numbers don't look that good. 6.8 points in 17 minutes, 3 rebounds, 0.8 steals, which is impressive for 17 minutes. But it doesn't tell the full story. What does tell more of the full story is what he was able to do in the last couple of months in Denver post All-Star break. 11 points, 4.5 rebounds, 2 assists, 1.2 steals, 44-81 as his percentages, almost a 3 a game. There's some good numbers. Not fantastic, not that exciting, but enough where you had to stream him in and out of standard leagues. He was the 153rd ranked player post All-Star break, so 16-team leagues definitely had a big use for Will Barton. And the word on the street is that they do like what they saw from Barton, and he's a restricted free agent. They'd like to bring him back next season as a backup. Now, The thing is, they've got Gary Harris, who they took in the first round, who plays that same position. Now, Harris didn't show a huge amount. You'd think they'd want to give Harris more playing time than Barton, if they do bring Barton back. But again, we'll see how it all shakes out. Barton could be a guy who, if he gets those minutes, deeper leagues want to pay attention. I don't think there's big ceiling on Will Barton, though, so I don't think dynasty leagues should be trying to acquire him at all costs and thinking there's a big Will Barton breakout coming. But we saw what he could do, and it was moderately impressive. Speaking of the rookie shooting guard, Gary Harris, took a while to get started, only played 15 games, and didn't... I'll say he took a while to get started. He never really got started. He had a couple of decent games. 13 minutes, 3.5 points, 1 rebound, 0.4 three-pointers, shot 30% from the field. Just a real standard, typical rookie shooting guard type of season from Gary Harris, and that's okay. We didn't expect miracles. We didn't expect him to be an all-star or anything like that, but the numbers were... That was sort of within expectations. Even his per 36 numbers were not impressive. His rankings are not impressive either. 331st in the last month, 386 post All-Star break, 416th per game. There was not a lot to like with Gary Harris. Based on this, though, dynasty leagues, you might be able to get him at a discount. I think that there's something in Gary Harris. We saw what he could do in summer league, and that's not the greatest identifier of talent or anything like that. But he's a rookie who battled injuries and had to get himself, you know, two coaches in his rookie season, plus battling injuries, and there's not much in front of him. Will Barton's not someone who's a big challenger. Randy Foye, as solid as he is, he's not necessarily the long-term future at that position. Harris is someone who probably, if you try and trade for him, you don't get the benefits from it for about 2-3 years maybe. But I think there could be decent top 150 potential in Gary Harris at some point. A couple of other shooting guards they had on their roster, there's not really a huge amount to talk about with those guys. Ian Clark, Jamal Franklin, they're never going to be better than what they currently are. And the level of what they are at the moment is not great. Clark is a restricted free agent. Jamal Franklin is still signed for one more season. And Franklin's an interesting player. Sometimes he can have a little bit of value, but we have to be really, really, really deep. And I don't think there's much value in investing in him in a dynasty-type format. Small forwards, there's a lot to like here. Well, not even to like, a lot to get interested in. Let's start with Wilson Chandler, who went through a stage in the middle of the season where he was absolutely red hot. Cooled down a little bit, but still, when you look at the Roto rankings and he's the 64th ranked player, I don't think many people would have expected that from Wilson Chandler. 83rd in head-to-head leagues, and his per-game numbers are 116. He actually played more games than we would have expected because he has been notoriously injury-prone, only missed 4 games, 32 minutes a game, almost 14 points, almost 2 threes, 6 rebounds, 0.7 steals. He's a great sort of roto talent who can help you in a number of areas, doesn't really hurt you in too many areas, or his field goal percentage wasn't great at 43%. But I don't imagine that Wilson Chandler is someone who's going to get any better than this. He didn't really show any significant improvement with the new coach. He had that hot streak when Brian Shaw was around. It was, I would say that Chandler moves to more of a 28-minute backup role this season because of what we saw from Danilo Gallinari at the second half of the season. Now, Gallinari had that ACL problem, and when I did the Denver Nugget preview podcast at the start of the season, he was a guy where I said, yeah, not a bad choice. Last pick of the draft, he can be a top 50, top 60 guy because that's what he was in all the seasons before his injury, a top 60 type player. And it didn't look good at the start of the season. He only played 59 games, so he missed a lot of games. He was in and out of the lineup. But then when he came back from that another knee injury in January sometime, it was on, basically. He was just insane. The numbers that Danilo Gallinari were putting up was crazy. Let's look at his numbers. Head-to-head total, 169. We expect that because he didn't play many games. Per-game value, 117. You know what? That's pretty good from a guy coming back from ACL injury. You can use that in 12-team leagues. There's a bit there in 10-team leagues. But then I scroll over a bit and I look at the rankings for Danilo Gallinari post-All-Star break. 27th. The last month, 20th. He got red hot. In the last month, he averaged 20.5 points and almost 3 triples. 5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 1.3 steals, almost a block. He shot 48% from the field and hit 88% of his free throws. He was an all-round star, basically. He was fantastic, and the minutes were there as well. He was just getting more and more minutes as the season progressed. He missed a few games, some back-to-back sort of situations, but I imagine he's going to come back fully fit and fully healthy. The slight caveat with him is that in the last 2 weeks of the season, he was getting red hot. He hit 53% of his three-pointers. That's an unsustainable amount. He's more of a 35-36 type guy shooting, so that'll drop his scoring down a bit. But we weren't expecting him to go with 25 and 3.5 threes, which is what he did in those last five games of the season. He wasn't going to ever continue that red-hot shooting, but he is probably the most talented player on this team. Well, not probably. I'd say he's definitely the most talented player on this team. And if he's back and ready from those injuries, he's a top 50 player for the next 3 to 4 seasons, I would say. I really like Danilo Gallinari if he is fully fit and healthy, and we did see that down the stretch that he was fantastic. Power forward. Kenneth Faried. What a disappointment he was to start the season, and a lot of that was Brian Shaw induced. He only played 28 minutes a game, and then you think about it, and you go, okay, well, the year before he only played 27 minutes a game, and Brian Shaw did the same sort of stupidity to him that year, you know, not playing him big minutes, but this year it was blatant. It was just, we're going to play him 18 minutes, we're going to play him 19 minutes. It just didn't make any sense. His averages for the season, 12.6 points, 8.9 rebounds, 0.8 steals, 0.8 blocks. It's not inspiring. He still came in as the 75th best player in head-to-head leagues. He was the 73rd in Roto. His per game is 97, but post-All-Star break, new coach, 67th. Last month, 53rd. He started to get it going again. In the last month, we look at him, he's at 16-9 with over a steal a game. He hit 71% of his free throws, 54% from the field. He got a lot better as well. Now, we hear a lot of reports of the Nuggets not necessarily loving Kenneth Faried, not loving what he is like as a person or as a player or someone who they shouldn't have. Maybe they're regretting paying him that sort of a contract that they did in the offseason. But he definitely turned it on at the end of the season. Now, when he gets or if he gets traded is a completely different situation. But I still think that he's going to get overdrafted next season. I think that he will get picked around that pick 50 to 60 mark. In some situations, there'll be two trains of thought. There'll be the people who go, look how good Kenneth Faried was the second half of the season. That dickhead Shaw is gone. There's, you know, we saw the big minutes, the big numbers coming. Or there'll be the people going, you know what, this guy burnt me. He's done it 2 years in a row, started off horrifically, then come home strong. I'm not taking that risk. I'm probably in that second group, not necessarily because I think, you know, he's just going to be a consistent poor starter. I just think that the people who do love him are going to pick him way too high, or much higher than I would like him. I think he's more of a 70 or 80 ranked player, not someone who you'll hear people saying pick Kenneth Faried in the 40s or something like that. That feels way too high for me. He's basically a points and rebounds guy. He can get some blocks, only 0.8 last year, 0.9 the year before, 1 the year before that, 1 the year before that. It's not a big strong suit. Steals he did improve in, so that's if he can get those steals up, if he can get 1.3 steals, that makes me more likely to go, yeah, top 60 maybe. If he gets those blocks up to 1.2, along with, you know, 15 points and 9 rebounds, that's a top 50 guy. But my hesitancy still remains with Kenneth Faried. I'm still not as on board with him as being a top 50 staple for fantasy rosters. Other power forwards on this team, JJ Hixon, someone who is just a minutes thief, pretty much everywhere he's played. Down the stretch in Denver, he didn't get as many minutes, which was great. 7.6 points for him, 6 rebounds in less than 20 minutes. He does nothing else apart from get those two stats, points and rebounds, and that's great if you want points and rebounds or you want double-doubles, but it's not really an ongoing strategy for fantasy leagues. Head-to-head 250 rank, 316th per game. It's just it wasn't enough to get anyone excited, and I don't really see it improving in the future. Darrell Arthur, another guy who played more minutes at times than he probably should, had an okay season. 17 minutes a game for him too, 6 points, 3 rebounds, 0.8 steals. A horrible shooter for a power forward, just 40% from the field he shot, and he got worse as the season progressed, and that was to do with Faried actually getting more minutes, because Arthur was getting minutes in preference to Faried, which probably is one of the dumbest things that Brian Shaw did. But we see as Farid's numbers go up, Arthur's numbers came down. He did suffer some injuries towards the end of the season as well, so that's partly to do with it. But it's the fact that, you know, a lot of his numbers were bumped by the fact that he was getting minutes when he shouldn't have. Once that changed, he started to drop off. Dynasty League, guys, take note. Joffrey Lavernier came in, made his NBA debut, played 24 games, 11 minutes a game, 4 points, 3 rebounds, 0.4 blocks, 0.3 steals. The standard poor shooting from a rookie. I really like Joffrey Lavernier. I think that there's some great fantasy value there for him. Not necessarily great top 80 sort of value, but he can be a top 120 sort of guy. And if Farid is traded out of there, I would be putting as many minutes into Lavernier as possible. That might only be 21 or 22, but I think Dynasty Leagues, you don't want to pay too much for him, but he got better. He was the 293rd ranked player at the end of the season, as opposed to his 394th for the entire season. So a big jump as he started to get better towards the end. I like what he's able to do. He was a guy that, even before the season, before I knew they'd bring him over, he was a guy that in deep dynasty leagues, I was saying, you know, get this guy, stash him somewhere if you can, because it could pay off to a degree later on when you've got someone that no one knows about, and you can just sit him on the end of your bench, set him in a minor league roster or any sort of thing like that that you've got in your dynasty setups. He's a guy that I think that they're going to see something decent from him. I think there'll be... I hope we see something decent from him. I think he's a really, really intriguing player. The other power forward on this team, Shavlik Randolph. We don't need to touch on Shavlik Randolph really at all. There's nothing to really say about him. He most likely won't be with the team next season. Center, Yusuf Nurkic. Now, I loved Yusuf Nurkic. I still do. I haven't completely disowned him. But he was victim to some bizarre coaching. Brian Shaw, at first, would eventually... Yeah, Shaw made the decision, we're going to start Yusuf Nurkic. He started him over Timofey Mozgov, and then Mozgov got traded. But then he wouldn't play him, which baffles me completely. Why you would start someone and then not play them minutes. Now, I know that he suffered a lot of problems with the fouls. He also suffered that ankle injury, which cost him a lot of games. But when he was in the game, he was just an absolute stat accumulator, a massive, massive beast of a player. The second half of the season, didn't get as many minutes, even when he was back from injury. So that really confused me. I don't know why Melvin Hunt wasn't playing him. Considering he was a rookie, he was a lottery pick. They should have been putting him in there and giving him minutes. Now, we can look at his numbers for the season and go, yeah, 7 points, 6 rebounds, 0.8 steals, 1.1 blocks, and go, whatever. But that's in 18 minutes. Per 36 minutes, 13.9 points, 12.4 rebounds, 1.7 steals, 2.2 blocks. That's accumulation. That's stat accumulation. If he's not going to get 36 minutes next season, but if he can get 30 to 31 minutes as the team's starting center, which he should, he's over his injury, hopefully everything is all good in terms of how the coach wants to use him, he is going to be a guy that I'd be happy taking in the last round of 12-team leagues next season. I think there's definitely, well, you know that I think there's a lot of talent there in Nurkic. A massive steal accumulator, great rebounds, big blocks. He's got to stay out of foul trouble, which will come down as he gets more experienced. His shooting will go up, and he will start to become a real fixture in the paint there for Denver and put up some big numbers. So I'm a massive, massive fan of Yusuf Nurkic. And if people would... disheartened by the way he closed out the season, I'll be making moves to try and get him onto my roster, because there's not like there's anyone there to challenge him. JJ Hickson, Shavlik Randolph, Darrell Arthur, these guys aren't challenging for Nurkic. Now, they could pick a center at pick 7. Willie Cauley-Stein could be on the board. They could go with someone like anyone. They could take Frank Kaminsky at pick 7. But Nurkic, I think, is a guy that I really am interested in to see how he develops over the next couple of seasons, because he has been a not pet project, but he's been someone who I've been keeping an eye on all of last season and waiting for the breakout to come. And it came, and then it was stifled by coaching ineptitude and by injuries, which are not two things that you want to really happen at all. But it did, and that's what happened with Yusuf Nurkic. Now, that's it. That's the players on Denver. What we need to do is look at the overall of this team. Now, Lawson, Fareed, Gallinari are their best three players. Having those three guys as your best three players, you're not winning a championship. You're barely winning a playoff round, I would have thought. If Lawson and Fareed want to get traded, that's fine. They're not great. I'd be trying to maximize what I can for them, and if they want out, I'd be trying to accumulate assets. Yeah, be bad for 2 years. Now, Denver probably won't want to do that given the way their ownership works and GM and all that sort of stuff. I don't think they'll want to do that. But losing those two guys and potentially getting players better than them and building with, say, Gallinari and building with Nurkic, giving more minutes to Gary Harris, getting a guard in the draft at pick 7 maybe to replace Ty Lawson, it's not the worst thing in the world. So that's going to obviously drastically change what this team can do. But there are enough interesting pieces who broke out in that second half of the season, like Gallinari, the improvement for Fareed, and then there's the regression of Ty Lawson and the confusing situation with Jusuf Nurkić and the coaching staff that it makes it a very, very muddied situation out there in Denver for the Nuggets. That's it, guys. Now, remember, head across to YouTube and search Red Rock Fantasy Basketball. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. What I'm going to be putting out there is, well, I haven't completely decided on everything, but there's going to be some just short videos. But what I am going to be doing in the coming weeks is I'm going to be announcing the Red Rock Dynasty Basketball League. I'm going to be announcing it on YouTube with the details and how you guys can enter into the league. So make sure you subscribe on YouTube, and I'll tell you about it when the video is out there, but I'm going to give the details out on YouTube. So make sure you're listening or you're watching the video there to see if you're going to enter the Red Rock Dynasty League, which will be obviously it's going to be a dynasty league. And it's going to be some interesting guys in it. Myself will be in it, obviously. And Mark Roberts from RotoWire is going to be in the league as well. And we'll get you guys in there too. Dynasty League. So it's about team building, rosters, all that sort of stuff. But as I said, more information will be released on the YouTube channel within the next week. So make sure you are subscribing and checking out the video contents over there and letting me know what you think. Follow me on all the other social media areas, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, Google+, MySpace, whatever. Follow me on all those places. Review and rate the show on iTunes. Send me any questions through any of those places as well. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.